And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I'm one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, Blake. I don't know if you realize this. This is not totally related to college football, but I didn't realize last night after the show, it occurred to me that NFL training camps open on Friday. One of the first teams, some of them report next week, but the Seahawks are the first team reporting on Friday. I don't know what it is.
The Hall of Fame game, I think, right? Because they get to report it because they have four preseason games. Isn't that because they're in that Hall of Fame game in Canton?
The Seahawks are not in the Hall of Fame game. It's the Cardinals and the Panthers. I don't know why the Seahawks rookies are reporting like a few days before everybody else's rookies. They're reporting like 4 days earlier. I have no idea why that's happening. But when I made that realization, it kind of like hit me. I was like, oh my God.
Well,
we're here. This is actually real. I don't have to kind of pretend that we're getting close.
You know what happens in a week from today?
Is that when LSU camp opens or
SEC Media Days? Do you know what happens 2 weeks from today? I say today, it's technically tomorrow. Do you know what happens in 2 weeks?
It's Big Ten. Big Ten.
It is the Big Ten Media Days. So, yep. I mean, we are pretty much here. Now, we got about 15, 16 days until camp does open up for LSU. But, Joe, we're here. So, I mean, as Media Days are fastly upon us, the Home Run Derby is tonight. You know, you got a lot of – that's when you really – you know, Major League Baseball draft is over. You kind of start turning that page. We're here. I mean, the truth of the matter is we'll talk about both media days. I'm sure we'll talk about the ACC as well. Joe, you know that less than probably 2.5-3 weeks, we're breaking down week one games. How close we are. So I can't say it because we're on a public forum, but there are a lot of levels of excitement. You know, let me cover my hoo-ha's up here. But I am pretty excited that, I mean, we're back. I mean, we are back. I mean, we are here.
That's my point.
So it is going to be fun. I did see somebody tweet today. They said something like, I would kill for, what was it, the Browns and somebody, Browns and another really bad NFL team playing on Thursday night football. And I'm just like, you know, I get what he's saying. It's really funny, but he's not wrong. Like, I would die for some football. And well, in about 3 weeks, you're going to get it. Because the NFL will start opening up. So that's going to be really fun for that. But we do got a lot that we need to talk into today as we are on our track of this college football season officially starting. We'll talk about a couple of wild card teams. Joe, I thought that this was interesting. I saw that you had Brent Venables in the overlay. So I'm assuming that you're going with the Oklahoma Sooners. I'm just assuming there. But we'll call, well, I don't know, like wild card teams, potential playoff teams, teams that could shock some people. One I've been talking about a lot. We'll talk about that as well. A team that, Joe, I got to be real with you, is more if I dug in today on them, I don't know if they're not going to be my surprise team. As we'll talk about the Louisville Cardinals here today. I like them, man. They got a lot. I like Louisville. I like them a lot. We'll talk about them. Could they be that second team in the ACC? They do have a pretty interesting schedule. Can they work through it? We'll talk about that tonight as well. And legal tampering. Just wave the white flag, why don't you? Just wave the white flag, why don't you?
I don't know if that's truly what it means. I'll save it for when we get to that. I think that could be pretty good for a lot of the issues that we deal with tampering. I'll save my thoughts on that.
Here's my thing. But when we get to it, here would be my only thing. The statement from the NCAA says it would ramp down tampering. Are you kidding me? If you gave a 3-week window for people to tamper, you mean to tell me that it's going to go down? And what's a contactable player, by the way? That's basically any player that's got an agent. So don't tell me it's going to ramp it down. It's going to ramp it up. So, I mean, come on, man. No, it's going to ramp it up.
I'll say what I have to say about it later. I kind of disagree with that. We'll get to it when we get to it.
Of course, we're going to disagree. By the way, before we get started, I didn't talk to you about this. LSU just came out, which made me think about this, and stated that they are going to go against the Protect College Sports Act. Did you see Tom Mars also tweeted today? The big-time attorney tweeted and said that he had spoken with Mitch McConnell, and a majority of senators believe that this bill is not going to pass. Did you see this? I think this is something this week we might have to monitor.
Yeah, I didn't see Mars's commentary on it.
And basically, he talked to Mitch McConnell in the hospital. He asked him about the Protect College Sports Act. And in asking Mitch McConnell, he said that he was pretty confident that the bill was dead.
Okay. I do think that you're right. We probably are going to have to pay attention to this. I wonder if something comes out on this week. But if there is continued joint opposition on this, I it's what we've talked about multiple times. If there is not going to be an adjustment to what the SEC and the Big Ten want, then those states that have programs that are in the Big Ten and the SEC are going to get in the way. They're not going to push this thing forward like everybody's hoping for.
Joe, this isn't passing.
I don't think it is.
This isn't passing. You got a lot of teams in the SEC that are mad about this. It's going to be really interesting to see if they make another amendment here, but then they'd have to go back to the committee. They'd have to go back to – might as well get it right now. I mean, my goodness gracious. This is getting insane. I just thought that was really interesting. All right, let's get moving here. Everyone do us a favor by hitting the like and share. If you're on YouTube, do us a favor, hit that subscribe button down below. We do greatly appreciate you doing that. Hit that notification bell as well. Use that link. Go over to Facebook. Share to all those groups and your social media pages as well. If you're on the 24/7 Sports Twitter page, hit that retweet. And wherever you listen to podcasts, do us a favor, rate, review, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. Also, every single show is brought to you by our partners and friends over at 24/7 Sports. You can use the promo code RJ60 at checkout. When you do that, you'll get 60% off of your annual VIP membership. 24/7 Sports got a big-time running back that's going to be committing on their platform here in the next couple of days. So you need to go over there, subscribe. You need to go over there and become a member, a VIP member. But use that promo code RJ60 and you'll get 60% off of your annual VIP membership. So a lot going on at 24/7, and we're glad to be powered and partnered with our good friends over there as well. All right, Joe, let's get rolling here. So I thought this was an interesting topic that you wanted to bring up today. You know, with Indiana in the last 2 years, I don't want to say year two that Kurt Cignetti and them kind of came out of nowhere, because they didn't. But there have been some teams over the last couple of years that, quote unquote, have come out of nowhere. I think of Ole Miss this year. I don't want to say that Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss kind of came out of nowhere, multiple seasons of 10 wins, but they did get to a Final Four. We have seen teams that have surprised people in doing some of the things that they've done over the last couple of seasons, especially with the playoffs expanding. Who are two teams this upcoming season that you think that play a wild card factor into this going into the season that no one – I don't want to say that no one's really talking about, but should get more consideration going into the season and being serious playoff contenders?
Yeah, well, okay, so the bigger angle that I had for this was less to do who could be more surprising and more so who has, like, the ridiculous range of outcomes for what their season could be. So teams that can either be – really, really dominant playoff teams that can actually maybe go on a little bit of run, do some damage, or it could be extremely disappointing. I think the one team that we've talked about a couple of times here that fits this perfectly, Blake, is South Carolina. South Carolina, to me, is like the one team that we have to bring up at the forefront of this conversation whenever we talk about a team that could potentially really, really shock everybody and completely dismantle their expectations. The reason why South Carolina works as a team that could get to the playoff, that could be at least a 9-3 team, Lenora Sellers and Dylan Stewart are physically the most gifted players at their positions in college football. Lenora Sellers can completely take over a game. We saw him do it 2 years ago. Dylan Stewart can completely take over a game. We saw it 2 years ago before he was banged up this past season. There have been improvements to this South Carolina team where I feel like they got better. But where this range of outcomes comes into play is they're either going to get to that playoff mark like we're talking about here, or as we discussed in their preview, there's a real chance that South Carolina balls flat on their face. They are sub 500 and Shane Beamer ends up getting fired. I don't see it really going any other way. I don't see a world where they're down the middle. There's a lot of volatility that's built in for South Carolina.
So here's my thing about South Carolina. Offensive lines have been issues. The guy that led them at the edge position in Sterling Lucas is no longer there. He went and got Kyle Kennard. He went and got Dylan Stewart. He went and got Brian Thomas Jr., not the receiver. And they dominated on the edge. I don't know how they're going to replace Emin Wari and the first Kilgore at safety. Joe, I don't know what they can do at wide receiver. And I agree with you that I think Lenora Sellers and Dylan Stewart are really good players. You got to have more with the schedule that they have. They could have a wide range. I agree with you. They had a lot of those same pieces, and they've done a really good job developing on the defensive side of the football. But where I sit here and I look at South Carolina and I look at their schedule, I get that you're talking about a wide range, could even make a playoff. We talked about 2 years ago what they did. I just got to see them actually put something together offensively. The thing that does really pique my interest when you talk about them is Kendall Briles. And can you unlock that Superman cape that Lenoris showed 2 years ago? I thought Lenoris sat in the pocket a little too much last season trying to prove a point instead of just playing his game. I thought that their run game was anemic because their offensive line stunk. Had you gotten better there? Joe, are we 1,000% sure that they've gotten better there? So where I agree with you that I think that they have a lot of talent, I don't know who he's going to throw the ball to. I don't know how Kendall Briles goes into the SEC and does ultimately. I mean, he did some good things at Arkansas. But I don't – because, look, the last time we saw him in the SEC, he helped Sam Pittman, of all people, get to 9 wins in a regular season. So I'm not going to say with a very tough schedule. So I'm not going to say it's not doable. But they've lost a lot. And they've lost a lot in their back end. They've lost a lot, I think, in Sterling Lucas. I agree with you that Dylan Stewart is an outright freak. However, I'm going to get killed for this. The talent sometimes I feel like that they have doesn't translate to actual results. I mean, yes, he had 6 sacks as a freshman. I think, what did he have, 4.5, 5 sacks a season ago? Yeah, Joe, it was the other guy. Back. What was it?
He had a bad back. That was, yeah, that he was had the a reason bad why back. He played that poorly.
But Kyle Kennard and Brian Thomas Jr. were the guys that propelled them. I'm going to pump the brakes on them because I've seen the talent that they have, but I just don't know if they're going to be able to at all positions, if they have the talent at all positions to be able to do that. Now, you're ready to yell at me? Because okay. I think that there's a team that is similar to what I'm trying to say that you could also disagree with me on. I'm going to keep riding this Florida hype, man. Because here's the difference when I look at Florida versus a South Carolina. Vernell Brown III, Dallas Wilson, and then you bring in Singleton. I think that offensive line is going to be tough. I think that their offensive play caller is really good and has proven that. They have 2 really good backs. And if, by God, they figure it out at quarterback, Joe, they could have something. And so when I look at, like, South Carolina versus a Florida and why I would lean Florida as a team that could do damage with Summerall, I love their front 7. They got a lot that they are bringing back there. You got Kamani McLean that's on the boundary. If there's going to be a team that I say that I'm going to take a risk on, a wild card of sorts, I don't know if I don't go for Florida because I feel like that they have more talent scattered around versus needing Lenora Sellers and Dylan Stewart to go off, if that makes sense. So I know I kind of didn't merge and say, hey, I disagree with you, but then, you know, I just kind of merged it into Florida. But when I look at Florida, I see the talent on both lines of scrimmage. I see the talent at backer. I see the talent in the back 5. And then I see their offensive line, receivers, and running back and go, man, if they do actually and have a pulse at quarterback, I feel like they could be the team in an SEC that's really dangerous more than a South Carolina.
And I think that this fits the conversation that, again, we're going for of, you know, being a wild card, because like there is a world where Florida does end up being sneaky good, because a lot of the roster building that Billy Napier had done over the past couple of years, he didn't do a bad job with acquiring talent. You just mentioned a bunch of players, and they've got Dallas Wilson, Vernell Brown, and Singleton. All three of those guys are capable of being high draft picks, and Jaden Baugh could very well be the best running back in the country this upcoming year in terms of his production. I think that the two question marks for me that could sink them, and kind of like with South Carolina, they're either the unexpected 8-4 team that upsets somebody, knocks them out of the playoff race. Maybe somehow they go like 9-3. We've talked about this a little bit with them. The potential downside is both Aaron Filo and Tremel Jones, neither of those guys are good. The offense doesn't click. Maybe they have a good run game, but there's a lot of headaches because they just can't really find that player that can run the offense. And they replaced a lot of really good players on their offensive line. Austin Barber and Jake Slaughter are just two of them. The most important, you're bringing in new faces trying to rebuild this offensive line from scratch. I said this a lot last year. Florida had a good offensive line. For all their flaws that they had a pretty good O-line. And to bring in three new guys in the portal, we know that it is incredibly volatile trying to survive by that. So the way that this works in my eyes is, again, they're the plucky team that shows that they're improving. They're 8-4. Somebody loses to them that's not supposed to, or they end up going, you know, 6-6. And that feels like progress, but it's just not like a super sexy first season.
Well, see, and here's another thing too. I know John Summerall's never coached a game in the SEC. Why do I trust him more than Shane Beamer? Because if you're asking me right now who I trust more to get a team ready, it's not going to be Shane Beamer. It's going to be John Summerall. They have a very tough schedule, does Florida. You got at Auburn, you got Ole Miss, you got to go to Missouri. I almost put Missouri on this list because I think if Austin Simmons, who I still believe has been in a situation where a lot of people look at him and only want to talk about three games as an 18-year-old kid, if he plays up to his talent level, they could be plucky. They have South Carolina. But, Joe, you know, when I was thinking about this today, I went back and watched that Florida-Texas game today. It wasn't there. I mean, they just had dudes all over the place. A lot of those guys returning. You talk about Ball. You talk about Brown. You talk about Wilson. You talk about Miles in that second level. You talk about Carmani McClain, who had two big. I mean, he didn't technically get the assist, I guess, for some of the past breakups, but really made Ryan Wingo's life hell. I look at them and go, dude, everybody tells me that Texas has more talent, and I'm watching the game, and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, because they are really plucky. So those would be the two teams. In reference to South Carolina, that I'm – again, I go back to this. That intrigues me the most is Kendall Briles. And it's got to be. Because the last time we saw him, Sam Pittman had 9 wins. Sam Pittman, Arkansas, 9 wins. So we've seen him this is like the Walmart – or this is like the Coca-Cola version – with Lenora Sellers versus what he had at Arkansas, in my humble opinion, at quarterback. So I could see both. The quarterback position does worry me there. All right, who's another team that you're really looking into? And I won't merge the teams this time, I promise.
No, I feel free to. I think that made for an interesting discussion. As you alluded to, I put Brent Venables on the cover image, the thumbnail. And he was that team, Oklahoma, was originally in here. But then I started to think about it. I was like, who could be a little bit more unique? And I swapped out South Carolina for Oklahoma. Oklahoma is an interesting team to talk about because...
And they made the playoff last year. They're not really surprising anybody.
Yeah, but the reason why, again, it's to like kind of fill into the surprise would be, and I believe this, they're my dark horse team to get to the national championship, to kind of be like Miami or Notre Dame that maybe doesn't even have a perfect regular season, but just goes on a run because they've got the defense, they've got the offensive line. And there is a possibility, theoretically, that Oklahoma struggles a little bit because they have such a tough schedule. And maybe they go like 8-4. And we're looking at the end of the season thinking, what the hell happened to Oklahoma? But I wanted to go with Virginia Tech as my wild card team because why? Did you also go with them or you just hate that I picked Virginia Tech?
I hate that you picked them because we just talked about them last night.
I know.
Crap on James Franklin. And I'm like, oh, no, not again. But no, I do think that you have an interesting point here because of their schedule too.
There is a possibility for their upcoming opponents for them to put together a really nice resume. And as we talked about in their preview, I can see the vision for 9-3 because they're bringing back 14 starters from a year ago. It's an experienced roster. You don't need all of those guys to be key pieces. I think that if Kamari Copeland ends up being really dominant in the interior, that ends up being a spark for your defense, being shockingly good. And I think that something's there with Ethan Grunkemeyer. I think that this kid showed, despite being on a team that gave up last year, that he could, with limited experience, be a really good starter for a team, be one of the better quarterbacks in the ACC. It's not exactly there's like a high bar for him to cross for that to be accomplished. But there is a world where you bring back 14 starters from a year ago. Those guys are not very good, and you didn't really do much to replace many of them. And the struggles of just being a first-year coach, I feel like we could be looking at Virginia Tech and they're a 6-6 team, kind of like we just talked about here in Florida. Like I could see them being 6-6. And at the end of the season, we're recapping what some of the first year coaches did. And we're thinking, man, this didn't really go as good as everybody thought it was going to.
Here's my thing on Virginia Tech. I could see a world where they start the season and everybody is talking about them because I don't think that they have a very difficult path to start off with. But when you start the month of October and you got to go all the way across the country to Cal, potentially at night, doesn't even really matter the time because if you got to play in the morning, you got to play midday, your schedule is going to be off. But you have Cal, Georgia Tech, at Clemson, at SMU, Stanford is going to be what Stanford is, and then you have Miami. I just don't know if James and Virginia Tech can survive that, okay? I don't know if they can survive that October and November run because I don't know if they have the depth. I think that this is going to take multiple years. Ironically, I almost picked Penn State because of them having a very soft schedule, but then I'll get to them in just a minute. And why I didn't pick them. But I do think it was kind of funny you went with them instead of Penn State. I just don't – I don't know what to expect because, Joe, when we look at college football and we look at some of these coaches that have been fired, okay, and I do wonder if bringing back your head coach as your defensive coordinator and how that works, they still have a lot of the same starters and same players. 14 of those guys are still there. What happens when you were losing last year? Are those guys going to be replacements? We saw this with Brian Kelly as an example. A lot of people returned that were actually starters, and it didn't bode well for him at all. However, we've also seen instances where guys come in, starters are still there. I think of Marcus Freeman as an example, and they have a lot of success. So I don't know. I just feel like for me that no matter how I slice or dice it, like, I don't know if I see you going on a run where you beat Cal, Georgia Tech, Clemson, SMU all in order because even if you split that, you still have Miami. You still have a big rivalry game at the end against Virginia. I think Tony Elliott has done a really good job there. I think they're going to be really scrappy. I just don't know if I can see them being above 8-4, 9-3. But if they do get there, they're going to be an interesting team. That first 6 weeks of their schedule is going to be interesting because they could be 5-1 going into Cal. Maybe Cal, who's got a really good quarterback, is able to upset them. We will see. It's just how their schedule plans out. And I look at them and I don't know if they have enough depth to survive a season in a year one under James Franklin. So I guess we'll see. Any rebuttal to that?
No, I mean, it kind of aligns with what I'm talking about here, where things could all line up perfectly in a league where it's kind of open outside of the top four teams, where we understand who the real contenders are. It's possible, but to your point, there are a lot of challenges ahead. And I think that naturally the easy assumption is that James Franklin is the high floor coach that gets everything right in a hurry and they're going to be immediately competitive. But I don't know if that's necessarily the case. I don't think that that automatically applies and occurs in his first year at Virginia Tech. There is volatility to what could capably happen for this Virginia Tech team. We just don't know what it's going to look like.
Very well could be the case here. You know, it is ironic. Before we move on, I did almost go with Penn State. There was a world where I was really thinking about today when we were going to do this segment because of their schedule, Joe.
Yeah.
I mean, like, look, people get mad when we talk about this. You look at Penn State's schedule and that thing is super soft. I don't care what people think of and what their opinions are about the FPI on ESPN and Connolly and all that. Say you disagree with it. But I don't think the metric is really off of them being in the 70s when it comes to strength of schedule. However, that's why I was really laughing because you went with Virginia Tech and James Franklin. And I was really debating today about going with Penn State. I cannot, will not, will never put my faith in Rocco Becht. I'm not doing it. I refuse to do it. I will not do it. If you're a 59, 56, 57% completion percentage guy in the Big 12, what makes me think that you're going to be able to change that in the Big 10? But if there is a team that we are not going to bring up here and talk about in a big distance, that schedule is super, super soft. And Joe, God forbid they get to 8-9 wins at the end of the season because it's so soft. What are we going to talk about with Penn State? Now, I go with Penn State and I look at their schedule. I know that they got a lot that they have to replace. There's a lot that's going on with the Nittany Lions. But, Joe, are we 1,000% sure that they can't beat Northwestern, Wisconsin, Purdue, Minnesota, Rutgers, Maryland? They're tough games at Michigan, USC, and at Washington. So even if they went 0-3 in those games, there's going to be a world where you're looking at an 8-9 win Penn State team, and they're going to be fighting for a playoff. I'm not putting my faith in Rocco Becht. I will never forgive myself
if I
do that, so I'm not doing it. However, there is a team in the Big 12, or Big 10, that I am going with. You ready for it? You ready to yell at me? Because we are getting another version of Kurt Cignetti. I told you on CBS Sports Network, I told you when we were live and Ruffino and Joe Show was live on CBS Sports Network.
Okay.
Give me the Bruins and Bob Chesney. I love what he's doing. It happened once. It's going to happen again. As I told you on CBS, as I'm going to tell you now, I don't have a lot of real material stuff to go on with it, but you give me Wayne Knight, you give me Nico, you give me a brilliant coaching staff that knows and has kind of been there. And Joe, I got to be real with you. They did not have the dudes to go up against Oregon. They didn't. They got flabbergasted. But boy, did he put Dante Moore in a blender with dudes that had no business going up against that team. Look at how many turnovers that dude had in that game. Now, do I think that it's going to take him a little bit of time to really get UCLA rolling? I do. I literally just saw you in your last game in a playoff go up against a team that has out-recruited you and had more dudes than you, and you give them all kinds of hell and all kinds of situations. Wayne Knight goes off. I do wonder if Nico takes another step. And if he does, Joe, they're going to beat some teams that they're not supposed to. Give me the UCLA Bruins.
I like the pick. And when we discussed it,
God, I thought you were going to hate it.
No, because the way that you led that in, I was starting to think he's going to say something crazy about Indiana and I was going to start screaming at you, but you didn't. When you brought this up when we were doing the CBS Sports show, which we're going to be live again on Friday this week, I believe.
We are.
So we're going to probably do ACC predictions when we get to that. So tune in on Friday, folks. We're going to be live on CBS Sports Network in the middle of the day again. When you brought this up a couple of weeks ago, I had no problem with it because, and again, this is like to the definition of what the segment was, which is either completely out of nowhere and you shock everybody, because Nico did show some improvement at the end of the year. He's been out of the spotlight. Being out of the spotlight has worked for him. The NFL has actually an affinity for him more than anybody would expect. And you mentioned Wayne Knight is a guy that I really like. I think that he's going to be super productive at running back in the Big Ten. I think that Zahir West is also going to wreak havoc, and he'll be that next up-and-coming pass rusher that people are talking about that has the potential to be a high draft pick. But there is a comical amount of transfers. And while it could be logical to make the pitch to talk about, well, Kurt Cignetti did it, why can't we get the same thing with Chesney? I think that because it is such a mirror of Indiana, this type of roster building approach, this very specific of I'm going to take all these G6 guys with me to build my new team, there is a chance that this falls super flat.
I agree, very, very flat.
And like Nico could struggle like hell because he doesn't take a step forward because he doesn't really have the supporting cast, and this team wins 2-3 games. But I agree with you. I think they're winning more than that.
Well, okay.
I think that they will too. Just because we're saying the potential outcomes doesn't mean I think that the worst case scenario happens. I think all the teams that I brought up, the best case scenario is going to happen. I think the Virginia Tech is going to be good. I think that South Carolina is going to be good. I think Florida is going to be good. And I think UCLA is going to be good as well.
All right. In all seriousness, here's why for me. You start off the season at Cal. It's not an easy game. Okay. They have a really good quarterback. But Joe, if they get past that, San Diego State, Purdue, I get you got to travel all the way across the country and go to Maryland. You have a bye week. You go to Oregon. We already saw what Chesney and company and a lot of that team can do. Literally going on the road with a better quarterback into Oregon. And I'm just, let's just say they lose that game. They have Michigan State, they have Nevada, they have Minnesota, they have Illinois, and at the end of the season, they got to go to Michigan, and then they have their biggest and best rival in USC. You mean to tell me that they can't get 8 games? Because, Joe, outside of Oregon, I look at this and say they 100%, 1,000%. I mean, I could see him beating Michigan State. I could see him beating Wisconsin. I could see him beating Nevada. I could see him beating Minnesota. I could see him beating Illinois. I could see him beating Purdue. I could see him beating Maryland. Joe, I could see him starting off the season right now and beating Cal. I mean, Joe, I don't know if James Madison doesn't beat those teams from a year ago. Like, I don't know that, especially with Nico, who I am just saying this. I think in this scenario is going to take a step. Because of even with all of the chaos, with Foster getting fired, Joe, they got better. They were going on the road last year and piecing dudes up. Joe, I'm telling you, this schedule is easy enough for them to get into that second to last weekend versus Michigan with 7 or 8 wins, and we start having real, real big conversations about the Bruins like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It is literally Kurt Cignetti all over again. But here's the real truth. You don't have Penn State. You don't have Ohio State. You don't have Washington. You don't have the bigger teams on this schedule that you have to go up against. Now, I get you got Michigan, but, Joe, they're in a first-year coaching situation too. Like, anything can happen there. I do think their ceiling would be 9-3, but if you're talking about a 9-win UCLA team and year one under Bob Chesney, sign me up. How about this? I said I wasn't going to go with Penn State because of Rocco Becht. I trust Nico Iamalava 10 times out of 10 more than I trust Rocco
Becht. Oh, I 100% agree with that. I 100% agree with that. I don't trust Rocco Becht.
How about this? In the ESPN FBI that we just talked about, UCLA and Penn State aren't too far away from one another. They're not. And so if the quarterback position is a big deal. Joe, I could see them. So I've kind of been pumping them up. I think they have the best uniforms in the country, one of the best uniforms in the country. I love UCLA. No one really I want UCLA to be great. I just do. Because them, USC being good, West Coast football getting involved. Yeah. And I just really like Bob Chesney because he seems like a dude. So I'm gonna root for UCLA and Bob.
He's good looking. That's what it is.
Okay. First off, pause. That's not what I was thinking. Third off, I did create a dynasty, by the way.
Yes.
For the first time, and there is a dude on there that you can pick your coach. You know, on the video game that looks exactly like Bob Chesney.
I think I know the archetype that you're referring to.
I'm so like, oh my God.
You recreated Bob Chesney is what you're telling us?
Pretty much, but I don't play defense. I'm the offensive coordinator at Georgia. I always go coordinator route and everybody's like, why do you always play with Georgia? I'm like, have you ever ran the ball with Nate Frazier?
It's fun.
And by the way, Isaiah Cannon is a freak on that video game.
Is he?
Oh, dude. A complete freak. And I'm like, I just keep throwing it to him. Gunnar Stockton, by the way, if you go look at the picture that he gave him, the dude's cheeks are like out to here. He looks
his
like
face. I hope you mean his face.
Yes, not his booty cheeks, Joe. I'm talking about his face. I'm like, they did my man Gunnar really bad, bro. They did him really dirty. All right, let's move on here. We just talked about wild card teams, okay? I almost went with Louisville. I didn't want to do Louisville because we're going to talk about them. Dude, I really like this Louisville team. So we continue on our path of talking about teams and doing deep dives on them. Tonight we go to the great state of Kentucky, and we talk about the ACC team inside the state of Kentucky. Joe's been talking very highly to you Louisville fans, very highly on your arch nemesis in the Kentucky Wildcats. But are we going to get two pretty damn strong teams in the state of Kentucky this football season? Because I don't know if I'm not really liking this Louisville team. I don't think enough people are talking about them starting out the season with Ole Miss. That's just me. What are your thoughts about the Louisville Cardinals going into 2026?
So despite the fact that they're only bringing back eight starters, Brohm, as he's done every single year, was really successful in bringing inexperience. He had a really good job in the transfer portal. Always puts together a really good class. They are 28th in returning snaps overall. They're 15th in total starts for this roster. 6th in offensive line snaps, 9th in tight end snaps. They're also 4th in edge snaps and 23rd in linebacker snaps. So there's a lot of experience in various areas. There's a lot of talent in various areas. Isaac Brown is a home run waiting to happen. Mm-hmm. Shocking that Louisville was able to keep this kid, knowing how badly Texas and some other schools. Right. Yeah, that one of the most public recruitments for a talented player. Everybody and their mother knew that Texas wanted Isaac Brown. He averaged 8 yards a clip. 8 yards a clip. He got banged up last year, but 8 yards a carry is insane for him to be able to produce. There is a hope that Jahlil Skinner ends up being really productive, very talented guy, is a top 100 recruit in the 2022 class. And their defense has some interesting pieces. They think that TJ Capers, from what I was reading, there's a belief that, you know, he could be a top linebacker in the ACC. I really like Clev Lubin. I think that he plays hard as hell.
Lord.
He is physical, 8.5 sacks last year. The dude is going to be a top 100 pick. Most likely he could have been a top 100 pick if he had declared in the last draft class. There are pieces to this team, but like I do feel like that there is uncertainty. Talk about a volatile team. Talk about a wild card team as you led this segment in. I have zero idea of what to expect from Lincoln Kynholz. And I apologize if I'm mispronouncing that. Kynholz. Nobody knows. what he's going to do. Legitimately, he never played at Ohio State. He played a tiny bit in the bowl game against Missouri, if I'm remembering correctly. If that was, I believe that was him, where he had to, you know, step in there. I don't know what he's going to do. And when you've got a guy who has not played at all with a receiving core, who's the most productive returner is Trayshon Hurry, great name, 122 yards, and you're 73rd in the country in wide receiver snaps. I don't know what to expect from a Brom team that wins by attacking you through the air that does not really have the typical arsenal that it usually does. So I've got pause, but I'm recognizing that there's some talent on the table.
He got, speaking of Brom, he got just as much out of Miller Moss than Lincoln Riley did. Now, here's the thing that I will tell you that people don't remember, because they will look at this and say, Miller Moss didn't have a massive season. Joe, did you know that Miller Moss last year had 9 rushing touchdowns? 9. 9. The reason that I bring that up is because I do believe that Brom has done a good job at developing quarterbacks more than we give him credit for. Okay. Do we know what we're getting in Lincoln Kienholz? No. I know what you're getting in Isaac Brown. And I don't know if Ole Miss, to start off this season, is a really good team that returns Cam Franklin, returns Perkins, returns a lot of those guys, if that's a really good team to go up against in your first ever real overall start. However, Joe, I'm never, and I told you this during the season last year, I am never, ever going to doubt a team in Louisville or Jeff Brom that has a lot of new pieces going into a season thinking that they can't clip somebody, because that Miami game from last year sticks in my head. Now, I know that normally that we talk about the schedule at the end, so indulge me for just a moment. Mm-hmm. Your season comes down to 3 things. Does Isaac Brown stay healthy? Because last year he was not. Number 2, to your point, Lincoln Kienholz, what is he going to be able to do at the quarterback position, which is every single team and every new starter and every new quarterback in the country? But Joe, for their season, the third biggest thing that is beyond a shadow of a doubt, the thing that if they are able to do at a high level, they could be a playoff team or pushing for it. Can you contain running quarterbacks? Can you contain true dual threat level quarterbacks? Trinidad, Kevin Jennings. I don't really know what Mendoza is going to give you, but you have CJ Bailey in there. And I will throw in at the end of the season in Kenny Minchie. Joe, they miss Miami. They don't have Miami on the schedule this year. Mm-hmm. So if you're able to protect and contain Trinidad using his legs, you're able to do that to CJ Bailey and Kevin Jennings. They have a shot. I love what they're doing on the defensive side of the football, and they're not getting enough credit for it. You talked about TJ Capers. They bring back Antonio Watts. You talked about Clev Lubin, who had 8.5 sacks a year ago. Joe, I think they're a solid club. But it comes down to, is Kienholz going to be able to take you to the next step that you were unable to get to a season ago? Now, if you remember, this was an 8-4 team a season ago. They lost to Virginia in overtime. They lost 30-27, and they were on their way after beating Miami. They were a 7-1 team going into Cal, and they lost in overtime to Cal. They lost by 1 against Clemson, and then they got blown out at the end because Miller Moss was not able to play. They lost to SMU on the road. They did not have enough depth. So to your point, I think as a lot – by the way, they beat James Madison, who was a playoff team last year. To your point, as the season went on, Miller Moss had games versus Pitt. He had games versus Virginia. He had games versus Miami and others where he was throwing for 250 plus. So if you can get that from Miller Moss, You're going to be able to do that again, in my opinion, with Kienholz. It was the lack of depth because you had to go into the portal so much that at the end of the season and what happened to them in 2025, and quite honestly, what happened to them at the end of the season last year when they went on the road to Louisville, or 2 years ago, I should say, they went on the road to Louisville and lost by three. They lost to Miami. They lost to Notre Dame 2 years ago by a touchdown. That is what I see in them, is that there might be their biggest problem. Do you have enough depth now to be able to get you there of where you want to go? They were 9-14 2 years ago. We've seen him do it with Tyler Shuck. We've seen him – Joe, pause. What if I would have told you going into the season that Miller Moss would have 9 rushing touchdowns this time last year? If I would have told you this time last year that Miller Moss would have 9 rushing touchdowns, you would have called me a psychopath. Well, he did. And they put him in right positions to do it. Are we not – do we have any inkling to think that Kienholz could be better than this and could potentially lead him there, would be the three big things for me.
Well, he's more physically gifted than Miller Moss.
Without a doubt.
He has the traits and the tools to be a really good, productive quarterback in this offense. It is 100% on the table to be accomplished this upcoming year. And I think that's why there should be excitement, but there should be skepticism, because the kid hasn't played. You at least had Miller Moss on the field. You at least had Tyler Shuck having played a little bit. It just gets a little hairy trying to project, and this is very different.
Well, you can't project, Joe. There's nothing to project on because you have nothing.
Right. There's nothing to really project. I think that they're going to capably be able to run the ball pretty effectively because Brown's really good, and Kienholz, I think, you know, maybe could be a piece of this. I wonder, could he have like a Bo Prabula type of a year where Prabula didn't really do anything at Penn State? He enters into the transfer portal, and he had a pretty hot start to the year at Missouri before he got hurt. Can he capably do something along those lines? That's what they're going to need out of him. Their offensive line, though, does give me a little bit of pause, because I mentioned that they're sixth in returning offensive line snaps, but they have 4 new guys coming in. They're starting center returns, but they've got 4 new guys that come in the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna kind of transition to that. I don't disagree with the offensive line, but Kienholz did play in 7 games last year. Okay, he was 11-14 for 139 yards, a touchdown. They did bring him in some situations in those 7 games. They let him run the football a little bit. He did have 2 rushing touchdowns. I do think Brohm is going to be able to athletically get him in situations that are beneficial for him. They did bring over Trey Richardson. And look, I don't mean to poo-poo on the ACC. In the offense, that was Vanderbilt. They wanted to scheme you up, wanted you to play disciplined, wanted to run the football. Joe, Trey Richardson had 806 yards and 7 touchdowns a season ago in the SEC, and a team that did not throw the ball and had a quarterback that, quite honestly, everybody loves Diego Pavia. Let's just be real. The dude's not a good thrower of the football. And he almost had 1,000 yards in that offense in the ACC. And I see the schedule that you're about to go on against, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe Kienholz isn't going to be a great thrower. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But I do think that Brohm can put him in very beneficial situations, and I do like some of the other pieces that they had, the wide receiver. I obviously love Isaac Brown. They have had a revolving door along their offensive line. But again, it just comes down to me for them. I think Brohm has done a very good job at developing and scouting. I think he's done a really good job at getting the most out of his quarterbacks. I think if Isaac Brown does stay healthy, that he could be very dangerous along in adding Trey Richardson. Joe, it's where I look at them and say, can you contain quarterbacks that can move? What is Lincoln Kienholz? And then finally, do you have enough depth? I when we talk about teams, Joe, and we do these deep dives, we never talk about depth. Injuries are going to be a part of the game. And when you have to go in the portal that much, depth is going to be a massive issue. And while they start losing games later in the season, they come out in the season, they punch people in the mouth, and all of a sudden injuries start compiling and they start losing because they don't have it. That is the thing for me that I think that they have another issue with this season and why it's going to be a problem. Do you want to take a look at their schedule?
Yeah. Let me pull this bad boy up like we usually do. So I think that there's a lot of games for me on their upcoming schedule that I think that they can win, but are tough opponents. I don't think they're going to have any issue with Villanova, obviously. Wake Forest, Syracuse, Stanford, UNC should win, but maybe could provide them a hair of a challenge. I don't think they're going to beat Ole Miss. I am going to kind of chalk that up as a guaranteed loss. I think that beating SMU is capably possible, and they can get that job done. I think that NC State is going to be interesting with CJ Bailey. I think that they've got a lot of potential. Florida State, we have no idea what they're going to be. Georgia Tech is going to be probably a little bit worse than last year, but still highly competitive. Pitt brings back a lot of returning starters from last year, a young up-and-coming quarterback. And as you mentioned, I'm high on Kentucky. So there's a lot of matchups in here that I think that could be toss-ups, depending on how the season transpires. I feel like we might be shaping towards an 8-4 type of a year for this Louisville team.
I can see that too. I mean, I don't know what to think about Georgia Tech. Quite honestly, Joe, I know that Florida State today, did you see they brought in Tom Herman?
Yes.
What do we get from Daniels? You know, like, I mean, I could see challenges, but I also think Louisville's a very tough challenge as well. I say 8-4, 9-3 is where Brom has historically been with them. I think they do that again. I got to be real with you. I think that Ole Miss game will be interesting. Let me tell you why I think that game is going to be interesting. I think Ole Miss is looking forward to LSU more than LSU is looking forward to Ole Miss. I really do. Because every single little thing that Pete Golding has said, and he's going to say again at SEC Media Days, is we better start getting ready for Louisville. We better start getting ready. And, Joe, I'm just going to tell you this right now. I don't know what Ole Miss is going to be. John David Baker is going into his second year of calling plays. There's a lot of turnover on that staff. Mm-hmm. Everybody points to Trinidad Chambliss. You got to replace Stribling. You got to replace Wallace. You got to replace right at tight end. You got to replace offensive lineman. Oh, and by the way, you have got to replace Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr. and that entire offensive staff. Joe, you say you chalk that up as a guaranteed loss for them. They knocked off a national champion on the road, a national champion level caliber team on the road. I am never, and I think Pete Golding is spot on with this. You cannot overlook Louisville because as soon as you do, Brom will clip you and clip you quickly. Do I think they're going to lose? I do think they're going to lose. You ask me to pick who I'm taking. Obviously, I'm picking Ole Miss. But they are a scrappy bunch, and he is a tough-nosed coach. I think 8-4, 9-3, I'm right there with you. I think that's where they're going to be. All right.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you there. I think 8-4 is where I'm going to lock that one in.
Joe, everybody keeps talking about Ole Miss versus LSU. Everything in Louisiana is LSU versus Clemson. And I do think that there's something to be said about Pete having to constantly repeat himself, we better start getting ready for Louisville. You can't overlook teams, man. LSU included. You better not overlook Clemson. You better not do it. So it is what it is. All right, before we get out of here, Joe, last week we were not here. I'm just going to paraphrase this since it's a week old. Basically, the NCAA is going to be allowing a pair of weeks during the portal season for quote-unquote legal tampering. What are your thoughts on this legal tampering situation that the NCAA is providing potentially moving forward?
So what was shared by Ross Dellinger, what is on the table, this is not enacted. It is a framework that would permit contactable athletes. And that wasn't truly clarified, but my understanding is that those would be athletes that are at the end of their revenue sharing agreement if there was a multi-year deal. So, for example, DeMond Williams would not be able to be considered contactable. A Darian Mensa would not be considered contactable because they are contractually obligated for an additional season to stay at their current schools. It would permit contactable athletes and their agents to communicate with schools before the portal opens. I know you're going to disagree with me, but I personally think that this is better than the current situation. When you are in a world where you're fighting like hell to get people to stop doing something, this is already happening. Why not loosen and adjust the window that allows for this to occur? The portal window is small. Reach out and have communication with a kid. If he has an interest in entering the portal, let him. I don't think that this can be construed as a bad thing because it's already currently happening. Doing it under supervision, I think, makes this a little bit safer. I think that for all the crap that we deal with tampering and with the transfer portal, Blake, an adjustment and a softening is probably the best direction to go instead of trying to increase punishments that are impossible to capably enforce.
So we don't technically disagree, but just admit to me that you're waving the white flag. My problem in this is that the NCAA statement to Ross was, and I'm paraphrasing, but it's still what they're saying. They're basically saying that they believe that this is going to ramp down, Joe, tampering. Please stop. Please stop. Because it's not going to. You're basically stating that you're not going to even fight it. They're basically coming out in theory and saying, look, man, we get the whole Dabo situation, but if we go after Ole Miss, we're going to be having to go after a whole bunch of other teams, and it's just not beneficial for the sport. So here's what we're going to do. Everybody go contact players during the window that we give you. Please don't do it before. Do you want to know what coaches are going to think of that? Bro, you ain't going to come down on me if I'm tampering. Joe, they're literally admitting that they're not going to do anything. How do you come out with this and then go after Ole Miss? You see what I'm saying? Like, I feel like this whole Ole Miss thing's over with. It's got to be over with. You can't come out and let's just say that this passes. You can't come out and say that we're going to give you windows and say, hey, you can legally tamper, and then they're going to pop Ole Miss? Come on. They're waving the white flag. Do you want to know why I think they're waving the white flag? Number one, they have no leg to stand on. They have no leg to stand on. And Joe, number two, everybody makes so much money during the damn portal. They love the chaos. They love the chaos. Greg Sankey begged. Tony Petitti begged for the Protect College Sports Act. And then when it was time to nut up, they said, nuh-uh. Nuh-uh, we're going to find issues. Now, I do agree with their issues, but nuh-uh, we're not doing it. I just feel like that they are waving the white flag like General Cornwall Wallace in The Patriot. Do you get that reference? You've never seen The Patriot with Mel Gibson?
Yeah, there's a lot of movies that I haven't seen.
So uncultured. And we're
a lot of movies. There's a lot of movies I haven't seen.
How do you not watch The Patriot? We're coming out of the 4th of July. That's the most un-American thing.
Is that even about America?
Oh,
I don't even, I don't know. I've never seen the movie. Blake, I understand what you're saying, but I think that it does decrease tampering because you're rewriting the definition.
Coaches are changing the parameters
for how it's happening.
Well, they're tampering now with massive rules that are enforceable. What happens when you decrease them?
I don't think you're decreasing the rules. I think you're adjusting the window. There's a legal tampering. Wait. There's a legal tampering window in the NFL. Trying to operate in an old era of the sport when we need to be more professionalized is the best direction forward. This is something that's available in sports. Communicate with a guy before he decides to leave. If his contract's up, if the kid's contract's up, he's allowed to go wherever he wants. That's how this works now.
I don't necessarily disagree with actually doing that. I didn't say I disagree with actually doing it. What I'm saying is, don't tell me that it's going to ramp it down, though. Because that's what they're saying. Hey, it's going to make it better. No, it's not.
It's legalizing it so that it's not as...
You know what that does mean, though, in my opinion? I think you have more kids through the portal. If you give me a three-week window and I start missing on guys in the portal, you better believe I'm going to contact some other kids to try to get them on my team. If I have holes and I'm missing in the portal, I'm going to go look elsewhere to try to bring kids in. And all I got to do is go out there and call them and nothing happens to me? Let me give you an example. Hold on 1 second. Let me give you an example. Tennessee misses on Sam Leavitt. You mean to tell me that if they didn't have the window where they could legally tamper, they wouldn't have picked up the phone with no repercussions and called somebody and say, get in the portal, we're going to pay you $3 million, $4 million?
That's not a good example because the portal would already be open in that circumstance if they swung and missed on Sam Leavitt.
But that's when the window will be
open. The legal tampering window is before the transfer portal opens, so that doesn't
Joe, you work. Still
have I just the, think that
Hold on. You still have the playoff. You still have windows. The window is from December the 20th till January the 10th. Is it not?
But
the portal will be open.
Yeah, well, that's what you just said. So your example of saying that if you swung and missed on Sam Leavitt, that doesn't tie to this because the portal would already have been open. This is a framework to establish a period before the transfer portal opens for teams to contact kids. It's a separate
time. He was already in the portal. What if they called Gunnar Stockton? Pick a player.
If his contract's if Patrick Mahomes is a free agent in the NFL, you're allowed to reach out to him.
Yeah, but
before he signs an extension.
Free agencies like the portal. These kids will be on teams already that aren't in the portal. That's what I'm saying. If there's a kid on a team currently, you could pick up the phone and say, hey, this player is contactable. He's got an agent. Let me call him and tell him I'm going to give him $4 million, and he was never intending to get on the portal. You know what it is? It's Darian Mensah. Now that I think about it, it's Mensah. It's exactly what Miami did.
But he wasn't technically contactable.
He was contactable because they literally did it. Joe,
no, but
they literally
just because they did it does not, but contactable means that they're not contract. Darian Mensah was contractually obligated to return. He had to buy out of his contract in order to be able to enter the transfer
portal. You're fighting over the semantics instead of the actual action that happened. Forget the contract for just a minute. A team needed a quarterback. The dude was not getting in the portal. They called him and said, come here.
Different than what's happening right now? That's my whole point, is that nothing is different in that
you think
degree.
It's not going to get worse. Joe, you think?
No. It's going to stay the same. It's going to stay exactly the same. Something happens, we say it's going to get worse, and it never gets worse.
Joe, it's literally gotten worse every year. More kids have hit in the portal every single year since it's been enacted. It's gotten worse literally every single year.
I don't think that it has been a concerning problem.
It is a concerning problem. All right, if you want to see us disagree on Wednesday, join us at 6 p.m. Central Standard Time then. We'll see y'all soon. Peace.